podcast about sitcoms, and I'm your host, Michelle Aikowski, and I'm joined with three of the best people in the world, Dan McInerney, our producer, Stan Lykowski, my husband, and Luke Ward, this guy we met one time. And
not like an alley.
He wouldn't go away.
Jesus, you guys. I mean, you did meet me one time. That factually is correct, but I wasn't like on a train with a bindle.
Oh God!
We agreed to kill each other's
folks. He couldn't even afford a bindle.
I couldn't even afford a bindle. I got beans in a can.
But no, open up.
Luckily, I got big pockets. So this is the show where we talk about sitcoms, but we always start with things that we watched this week. And I would like to talk to Luke more about his Reno, which is also Reno.
Oh, my kitchen renovation.
Luke watched his kitchen get renovated by him.
By him. Yeah. No, if you want to see the progress, by the way, go to my Instagram. I do frequently put the stories up.
Luke 69420.
Yep. Luke lover 69.
Little Luke lover.
Oh no.
He loves little kids.
Oh, little Lukes.
I just oh God. I'm on a list now. No, it's Sir Luke Ward is my handle. But anyway, no, it's been going well. So I have not had much time to watch TV because I'm renovating and remodeling the kitchen myself. Not myself. I mean, my wife is helping me, and any neighbor. Like the other day, Michelle and I were trying to bring a cabinet in. I've never had a delivery like this, by the way. The cabinets were delivered on a semi truck. A semi truck came to my house.
Oh my! On your block.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was 5 pallets worth of material, and the guy was really nice. he helped bring all the boxes inside the house, which was he didn't have to do that. But he did after I paid him. But then there was one box that wouldn't fit through the door. So we had to take the Lazy Susan out, and Michelle and I, it was a long day and it was hot. And Michelle and I are just, do you ever like try to move something and you're like, even though you're not giving it all of your strength, you feel like you are, but you know, you're like, I'm done. My tank is at E. I cannot. That's what we were doing. We were both like pulling on this thing to get it in the house, and it was going nowhere. And it felt like it was welded to the door. We were just done. And our neighbor across the way was just like, okay, I'm going to step in now. And he grabbed it. And he's a state trooper and an ex-Marine and like studied karate in Japan. And like he's got his own gym in the garage. So he was just like, here you go. Bloop, bloop, bloop. You know, brought it in. It was really nice. But it was, you know, so I say I'm doing it myself, but with the, it takes a village. You know what I mean?
It always
with
does.
I
had socialism. So we went to the beach Friday, and you know, those umbrellas where like, if you can angle them, but there's always like that button in the middle you have to press.
Oh, yep.
That button is like an impossible button to press in. So I was like, I very quickly realized no amount of my strength is going to make this button press in. So I was only sort of like, my finger was connected to it and not much more.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, this ain't going to work. But like, I know that I had more strength than I exhibited, but I also knew it was futile to even try.
Yeah, it's like when that jar of tomato sauce that you're just like, well, this is just we're just never going to eat this tomato sauce.
We are done with sauce.
Yep, we're just going to eat this pasta dry.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Dan, did you watch
it? Can I say one thing that I have been watching that I really enjoy?
Okay.
Leslie Jones is both on TikTok and Instagram sharing clips of the Olympics, although by the time this comes out, it'll be way done. But that woman is so funny. So good. Her watching the women's speed walking competition is so great. That's the only clip I've been able to show to my daughter because she does get a little bit graphic with her language.
How does speed walking work? As long as you're not running, you can go as fast as you can?
Yes.
Yeah. There is, I believe, at least one part of a foot has to be on the ground at all times, I believe.
Okay.
And they have somebody who like walks along them or like is in a truck or is watching their feet the whole, it's useless. It's like, if you have to put that much effort into making sure they're doing the competition properly, then why do you even have it?
There has got to be an event that's better than that. This is the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like it, there has got to be an event that tops that. That can slide Leslie, into its place.
It made Leslie Gore, not her last name.
Nope. Be really Jones. Funny. Yeah. No, it does. It looks like everybody has to pee. They're just rushing to the bathroom.
Do they even have uniforms or is it like people in like corduroys they're and like dressed, a button down?
No, they're
just in malls.
Yeah. I mean, I did in high school. I did track. I threw shot put and discus. We had speedwalker people
really
on the team. Yeah, they would do speedwalking. And
it's from Long Island, they do crazy things.
And I was always like, they took it very seriously. And I, you know, I never said anything. But I was like, this is so weird. Just run. I don't. I don't understand. But you know, it was kind of a big deal.
I mean, it made it to the Olympics. It's a very big deal.
Yeah, but you definitely need like referees and umpires and things in sports to keep it fair and keep it legit. But to have a sport that requires someone constantly making sure you don't, you know what it's like? You ever play a video game where like there's a Batman Arkham Asylum? This is going to be a deep cut. It's great. Mm-hmm. And there's one part where Batman has to cross a pond or a water that has been frozen over and you crawl. And if you hit an audio level of a certain, like past the red line, you'll fall through the water and get eaten by a shark. Okay. I'm going to just tail by your face. You don't know what I'm talking about.
You're the only one who got that far.
There's just sometimes there's games where like you have to proceed, and if you get into the red zone, you lose. And this is that. This is just like you have to proceed without getting the red zone, and it's just like, why is this an Olympic thing?
Yeah,
no. I just see in my mind's eye a man on a skateboard on his belly just going along the side, looking at the feet. Oh, yeah.
Mo, imagine if it was a dog.
I'd watch that.
I mean, Olympic dog skateboarding would be amazing.
But you know, that bulldog would always win.
I don't know. Shih Tzu on a skateboard could. Yeah, it's true. Guys, what are we talking about? What is
anyway? Let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening.
Yep, this has been another effing podcast
about nothing.
I have a lot to say about the episode we're going to talk about. So
why don't we go into it?
I do too. I do.
Why only that? Yeah. Okay. Oh, let's jump right into it. Okay. So we're talking about going on the list of AV Club's best 25 sitcom episodes of the last 25 years. Of course, as always, written in 2015. So it's 1990. To 2015. This is number 14, which is The Larry Sanders Show, an episode called Flip, which also was the series finale. It aired, May 31st, 1998, written by Peter Toland and Gary Shandling, directed by Todd Holland. And the AV Club said, narrowing down Gary Shandling's showbiz satire to just one representative episode is every bit as difficult as his self-centered talk show host's perpetual search for a supporting player who would not upstage him, and as fraught with combativeness as any combination of real-life guest stars in his green room. Flip best captures all the things that make The Larry Sanders Show one of the greats. Structured like the typically cameo-packed sign-off you'd expect from an actual late-night chat fest, Flip doesn't skip on the comedy of seeing celebrities playing slightly fictionalized, holy asshole versions of themselves.
So good.
Flip offers a satisfying emotional conclusion for all the show's deeply flawed characters that evokes a genuine sadness at bidding them farewell while remaining bitterly funny and rare for a series finale true to the show to its very end. Thoughts?
So great.
So good.
I howled. I don't do that typically. I laughed so hard.
I also got choked up at the end.
Yeah.
Which, so I will say, I mean, I'm not a big late night TV guy, although, you know, my high school and college years were the height of Conan and Letterman and Leno, you know, the late night wars were like full, you know, front page news kind of a thing. So that you always talked about it or like, I think I'd stay up to like see Letterman's top 10 and then go to bed kind of thing. When their last episodes happened, like when Letterman left NBC to go to CBS, and even when Letterman ended at CBS, I was like, Cool, cool. The only one that like was a thing was when Conan's last time on the Tonight Show. That was amazing when he played Freebird for 10 minutes. I loved it. And it was emotional because you could see that he had been working towards something and it was just arbitrarily taken away from him. This was amazing to me. And I'm going to start at the end and then we can talk about the rest of the episode, but like to be able to artificially bring out that finality to it. Like I definitely saw episodes of the Larry Sanders Show. But it was on when I didn't have cable, so I didn't really watch it a lot when it was happening. To have a show that evokes such emotion for it coming to a close, for a show that I didn't really watch and I had not seen the whole series, was amazing.
And the arc between
amazing.
Yeah, Hank and Larry.
Yeah, Hank and Larry, and oh god, Rip Torn as Arthur, just so good. And then, I mean, and this is another separate discussion, so I don't want, but we can talk about, I don't know, but just the meta humor, the meta-ness of it, just Gary Shandling in general was, wow.
So good.
Yeah. One thing for table setting is I did a lot of Googling just to figure out when exactly this was happening, because like for one thing, and we'll get to this in a bit, but like Jon Stewart's in this episode, this is before he takes over the Daily Show.
Yeah. Right.
So he's still
MTV days.
Yeah. So, but to only say that the origin of this show in a broad sense was, this is at a time when late night shows were very powerful, which is a thing that's like hard to even imagine now. Yeah. That like it was so important. And there was a thing, you know, in the years before this, I guess the show starts in like probably like 94, of like, well, when is Gary Shandling going to get his talk show? Like, he's the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Shandling's got it. Gary Shandling has to do the talk show thing. And it was a huge deal that he was like, well, I'm going to do a fake version. I'm going to do this HBO show. And instead of actually doing a talk show, I'm going to have a pretend talk show on this sitcom. And then, so, you know, again, that idea, because there's also the joke where, you know, Carson had famously signed off and was like a huge deal, led to the whole late night wars. But, you know, there's the joke where Tom Petty and Clint Black are fighting in the green room. And Tom Petty says, you told me I was going to be the Bette Midler, which is like funny thing. But, you know, again, just only to say, like, you know, again, it's hard to, like, you know, if Jimmy Kimmel like ended his show next week, I would probably be like, oh, I guess I'm vaguely aware of that, but I wouldn't. Who would care? I mean, really. But you know, the idea of these, you know, of the Larry Sanders type, you know, ending his show in 1998 would have been a huge deal. And it's like, who's it gonna be? And you know, and it was true that people were like, Jon Stewart's got to get a talk show. He's the next guy.
Yeah,
like he's. And then of course he did the Daily Show after that, and it became such a huge deal. But it was just such a one thing that's great about doing this series is like going back in these old shows, and I just kept being like, oh yeah, remember, this is the way television used to be.
Yeah.
It was like so important. These like late night talk shows, like if you had a movie coming out, it was so important. You had to get on these shows, and you know, and it's just like, it feels like such a different time now.
Yeah. I don't. So I could have sworn that Jon Stewart had a deal with Letterman. I feel like I heard this recently.
Pants?
Yeah, like he had a thing with Letterman.
That sounds
so right. That, but Letterman did it just to make sure that
his
no
competition
one,
was under him.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I feel like I've heard that somewhere. I read that somewhere. I think it was like the anniversary of the Daily Show or something. And I do remember also Gary Shandling did host the Tonight Show. He guest hosted.
Yeah, like a regular, a semi-permanent like guest host. Wasn't he like the first go-to whenever they needed a host?
I think he and Joan Rivers were.
Yeah.
Like
hosting? Were they splitting duties at the same time? I don't remember if it was.
I don't remember.
Well, yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and yes, and that was why, because Gary Shandling would host, I have to keep making sure I'm not saying Larry Sanders when I mean Gary Shandling, and vice versa. But Gary Shandling was a guest host for The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and so he was very popular, and people kept being like, okay, well, now he needs his own show. Like, it just was inevitable that that was going to happen. And then again, because Gary Shandling does not get enough credit. He created two of the most brilliant TV shows of all time. Is Gary Shandling's show is unbelievable. I actually watched a couple episodes when it came on streaming like 2 years ago, or whatever. It is just as good as I remembered it being. It is so insane, that show. If you don't know, the premise is that he moves into a house that has its own sitcom, and whoever lives in that house is in a sitcom.
Oh my
and so
God.
It is so it's so great. Anyway,
I will just real quick.
Yeah.
I do have to name drop for 1 second. So there's a classic TV director, and I can't remember. It's Adam Rafkin, I believe, or Alan Rafkin, mm-hmm. who directed the Ghost of Mr. Chicken and the Fantastic Mr. Limpet, and like
sure,
just like one of the like. But he came to my school a couple times, but one time he would do this thing where he would bring a copy of the script coach, and we would basically all have different parts and would
a table read.
More than that, because we had a TV studio. So like there was a director and a producer, and we'd hire actors, and like I got to be the switcher. I manned the board. And then he would talk, and we would, whatever. And he said I remember this. He was like, working on It's Gary Shandling show was very challenging, because he was one of those like almost like Artie in a way, where he was old school. And so he was like, yep, you put the three cameras here, and you come in here, and you come in here, and you do this. And Gary Shandling was like, cool, cool, cool. But also, I'm going to talk to the audience, and I'm going to break the fourth wall, and I'm going to do this. And he was like, no. Comedy is you come in, you do your thing, you fall down, you get up again, and then you start over, and it was just like,
good for you.
Yeah.
What we're gonna do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and I just
please refer to the name of the show if you have any questions.
Yeah. And I know, Dan, I'm totally interrupting you. I apologize. But it's funny that when you first said that Gary Shandling should have had a talk show, like, I'm glad he didn't, and I'm glad this was the result, because this fits so perfectly. Because to control the narrative, but also have the joy of having a talk show. Like, a talk show is great. It's a fun variety. It's just people having a good time and talking and chatting. But
there's an
artifice. Yeah, an artifice.
Talk shows in general, because you have to pre-screen the guests, no matter who, and like what's going to be the story that you tell. So like we had. Clearly Jim Carrey was not vetted before he went on the show. Like they kind of, whoever was producing the quote unquote show within the show did not do their job that day.
Well, as a matter of fact, they handle that in the show because they get him last minute. They even say, you want him, we can get him. So like there was no vetting. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think Gary Shandling is his like 70s stuff. His like stand up is unbelievable, because he was a guy who loved the show business stuff, but just could not be penned in by it.
Yeah.
Right. And he couldn't help but, point out the artificiality of stuff, which is what first It's Gary Shandling show was all about. I just want to say there was an episode. I don't know if I saw it in reruns. I'm trying to remember, but like I was probably like 10 or 11 when I saw it. Perfect age. There was an episode where it was right around the time that girl fell down the well. And so there's an episode of It's Gary Shandling Show where Gary Shandling falls down a well.
Shit.
And the way that, so the episode, the episode starts and they play the theme song, and they're going around the set. Like the camera's going around the set, and they're showing all the names starring Gary Shandling and whoever else is in the show, whatever, directed by whatever. And then it ends and it cuts to a wide shot of the set and sits there for probably about 45 seconds and nothing happens.
Wow.
Because you find out later why it's because Gary Shandling fell down a well, and so he can't be on the show. So it sits there for 45 seconds. And then you guys, they do the credits again.
Wow.
Starts over. This must go on for 5 minutes where literally nothing happens. Then it cuts back to the wide shot of the set, and it sits there for another 30 seconds before finally the door opens and one of the secondary characters is like, "Where's Gary? Why isn't the show started?" I mean, it blew my mind. That's amazing. I felt like it was like a pivotal moment where I was just like, "Oh, this is what tell this is what comedy can be. It could be this weird thing. Oh man, it's so funny. And then they finally see him down the well, and he's like, his one leg is like stuck up and his other leg is stuck down like this. And like he's trapped in this well, and the whole time he's so concerned that the audience can see up his nostrils because so funny. Anyway, but the other thing that I thought about was that artificiality you guys are talking about was like there's a moment where Artie, the producer, is walking and he walks through the set.
Right.
When the show is not on, like it's before they do the show. And it's like all the lights are off and it looks so ugly and dull.
Yeah.
And then you can see in the rafters like all the lights and everything. And then when you see it on TV, it's so bright and colorful. And it's just that like he just had to be like, yes, like this is all fake and all the fake stuff is fine. Like this is what entertainment is, but he couldn't help but point out, but look behind the curtain. Look how gross it is. Yeah. Back here, and you know everyone on this show is a vain asshole basically. And he's like, and that's just what it is. Like I think even, and it was so interesting. Wow, there's so much to say. I don't want to get out. It was just so interesting that one thing I hate is when people are like, oh, you couldn't make this show today, and it's like, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is one of the times where I was like, I don't know if you can make this show today. Cause like, I just think celebrities are just too guarded. I don't know if they would be willing to do this.
I mean, it was before David Duchovny had his.
Right.
His sex addiction. Yeah. That whole David Duchovny storyline which I think was in a previous episode, right? Where David Duchovny's in love with him and it means
it was a running joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brought that back.
That was one of, and there's a few things in here that were uncomfortable because of how they play out in real life. But in the episode, David Duchovny will come on if Larry meets with him and they talk in secret and whatever. And he goes to his hotel room and you see
his pee pee.
You see the dark Netherlands.
Yeah, it's close.
But you see like the Mons pubis or whatever.
Yeah.
Just that area, above. But anyway, so
you see down that well.
You do. You definitely do. Yes.
We see up those nostrils.
You don't see baby Jessica, but you definitely see.
Yeah. You don't want her down there anyway.
But that was so weird because it was such a contrast to who David Duchovny was at the time. But we later find out that he's a sex addict in real life. And just.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, so much of this is so close to who these people are. Obviously, it's fictionalized. Yeah. But I think one thing that was known about Jon Stewart that he was too nice a guy. That was one reason why he actually didn't succeed until The Daily Show, was that he his agent is like, don't talk to Larry. And then the next shot is him going in to talk to Larry.
Yeah.
Because and then the Jim Carrey thing, I don't know if he's really that much of an asshole, but I think it was true that he was red hot at the time.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, I'm sure it was all going to his head. And the fact that they were willing to go on this show and play a version of themselves, including David Duchovny. Like, I think it was known that, he probably had a sex addiction until the point where it was so bad he had to go to rehab for it. But all these things were sort of true. And the fact that they were willing to go on, because, there's probably a lot of idiots who would watch this show and be like, why is Jim Carrey such an asshole? There is a danger that he could have hurt his doing that, because people just wouldn't understand that it's fake or whatever, But so great.
The talent on Jim Carrey, though.
Oh, yeah. I would say, too,
fucking talented.
I think that there's so many things I want to say, too, about this show. But I'll just say about Jim Carrey. I mean, I think the thing that plays real to me about Jim Carrey is he gives 110%, and that no matter what the role is. Like, I remember him talking about being in The Cable Guy, and even though part of the reason I think The Cable Guy flopped was he gave 110%, and there was no one to reel him back in a little bit.
It was too real.
Well, he gave it to a character that
comedy.
Right. Yeah. He gave it to a character type that wasn't appealing. Like, he was creepy.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think it didn't strike me that Jim Carrey was being an asshole in the scene necessarily. It struck me as
stage hog. That's what he does.
Well, no, but I think what he was doing was saying I fucking hate you. But you know what? My art is to give 110%, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, and he also says, this is good for me. What I'm doing is good for me.
No, totally. But yeah.
Are you going into movies?
Yeah.
I do have to say they fooled me, because when they dropped that, like he said, Jim Carrey was too broad. That's like the little crumb they give you, and like, oh, okay, clearly this is going to blow up in his face for some reason.
Yeah.
But specific to what you were just saying about giving 110%, he is so effusive about missing Larry that I didn't see it coming when he hated him so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he was so good at.
Yep.
At saying goodbye, that I expected maybe a little shade, but like he hates him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely want to talk about all the celebrities, but I do want to say one quick thing I don't think it can be made today either, because I don't know that there's anyone putting out comedy as smart and as tight as this. Mm-hmm. There is. Everything, it looks easy. And I know I've said this before about other characters and people, and it looks like everything that goes together in this episode, every bit, every scene feels like, oh yeah, of course. Yep. This makes sense. And that is so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Fucking hard. I mean, like,
even the war Artie, 80, like,
yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Walking away. The
yep.
End.
Yep.
Goodbye.
And the scene with, yeah.
And drive it away.
Yeah, and Artie crying is done, but not crying. So great. And Hank's bit, just at the very end where he tells them to fuck off and then comes back and says, I'm sorry. Like, oh,
yeah.
Genius. Well, sorry, Stan, you were going to say,
this is what I've been thinking all along from when Dan first said, could it be made today and people are guarded? I know Gary Shandling was, and I know this is like a overused trope, but he is the comics comic. Like, he is the people that comics are like, my gosh, he's a genius.
Wrote a book about him, right?
He did a movie about him.
There's a documentary about him. But I think that's what you would need, is a person like that, where people are just like, I don't care what the cost. It's like wanting to play with LeBron or something. It's like, I don't care what the cost is. Right. I want to be with this person. I agree. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head that would pull people in like that.
Obama. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess the other thing.
The shit of Obama's sitcom.
I think the other thing beyond like celebrities being guarded too is like now the universe of entertainment is so like divert, right?
Sure.
Like, like there is no kind of one person. Like there's so many like sub universes right now. Although it's funny, I had not thought of it until this moment that Warren Beatty thing is also such a smart thought on celebrity, in that as hot as Jim Carrey was, he says, look, I have a movie coming out. Yeah. So like, and this is going to be huge rating, so I have to do this. Like, even though Jim Carrey was red hot, Warren Beatty is still on that next level.
Right.
Where he's like, I don't need your show.
Yeah.
Right. I'm Warren Beatty. Like, when he was like, I thought you could come on and say goodbye. And he says, I could say it now. Like, he couldn't give a shit about being on a late night show. He doesn't need to do that.
Well, to be completely fair, when Warren Beatty appeared, Michelle went, oh my gosh, it's Warren Beatty. It's the gravitas is real.
Well, that's so what's funny. Also so meta about this show is that Warren Beatty is too good to be on a shitty talk show, or just on a talk show, even though, like you said, these talk shows were powerhouses back in the day, and he is a powerhouse, but will be on the Larry Sanders Show,
right?
You know, and the same thing with like,
comic.
Yeah, you know, and God, Tom Petty.
Oh my gosh, he was great, by the way.
So good.
Like, his anger was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just playing a weird.
And hey, Bob Odenkirk, yet again on a show.
Well, one thing I want to say was, so when this episode started, the one thing I had to keep doing was being like, okay, wait, are they playing a character
right?
When he showed up, I was
Jeremy
like,
Piven too.
Right. Yeah. When he showed up, I was like, wait, is that Scott Thompson or is that Scott Thompson playing a character? And then he was.
Right.
But it was just that mix of, I mean, at the time, like Bob Odenkirk, you know, was not really that famous. So.
Right.
Probably wasn't that big of a deal as it is to us now. But yeah, it was just so funny to see like, okay, Bob Odenkirk is playing John Stewart's fictional agent, but John Stewart is playing a version of himself. Little baby face John Stewart, by the way. It was so crazy so to see. But but so much of that, you know, is people playing, you know, characters, playing fake versions of themselves.
It was, and even then they double or triple down on it because they have Sean Penn on and he's talking to him and he says,
I know.
you know, everybody in this movie that I'm with, we got blah, 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 Gary Shandling, blah, 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 is great. And then, then he shits all over Gary Shandling. And so you have a show that breaks the fourth wall, breaking its own fourth wall.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Deadpool couldn't even pull that off, you know, like, this is like, and I don't know if it's, Gary Shandling's, he's either a terrible actor or an amazing actor. And I don't know which one it is. I actually lean towards great, but you have a moment where he kind of doesn't look at the camera, but winks at the camera where he's kind of like, wait, Sean, are you fucking with me? You know, like, oh God, it's so good. Good. And like, God, to see Tim Allen be a dick, cause you know that
that's true.
Right.
That's true. Yeah. That is 100% Tim Allen.
Yeah.
And
that's why I feel like the Tim Allens of the world today just wouldn't do that. They just wouldn't. I mean, even look at Ellen, like is on this pretending to be the, like, you know, super nice person. And then we all know she is not, like, that was all fake, you know?
Yeah.
Stan, it's just amazing. Talked about, like, cause Carol Burnett had come and done. She did Jenny McCarthy. And that was probably the most exciting thing for me.
Yeah.
And
Stan, oh wow.
Please do not tell me she's a dick. Like, I couldn't take.
I was literally just gonna say, please don't tell me she's a dick. Is she a dick?
No.
She was
lovely. Apparently,
just listening to her and standing back, and you know, like, she didn't see me cry, but she gave me a really warm hug. And
oh, that's amazing.
I was also again suckered because I was not expecting her to come out and be mean. On the show, because Carol Burnett, like, she has zero reputation for being mean.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, that she would go on the show in front of the audience and call him out because she wasn't the first call. It's like, wow.
That's another brilliant thing about this show. So they do that. That struck me as a like. I'm so excited. I can't even get the words out. It struck me as a scripted bit with the show within the show, that it wasn't improvised. Like in the world of Larry Sanders, that was a bit that they had worked out together and blah, blah, blah.
Wait, are large swaths of this show also improvised?
I don't mean improvised. I guess what I mean is, like, it just in the world of Larry Sanders, you know, like, sometimes like, let's pretend that Larry Sanders is real for a second. Like, Sean Penn's interview feels like that is just Sean Penn talking and telling a story and blah, blah, blah. This in the world of Larry Sanders feels like before that commercial break, when they knew Carol Burnett was going to come out, they were like, okay, so then Ellen will come out and you guys pretend and I'll do this and blah, blah, blah. And they do it brilliantly because they cut to a break and you never know if, like, I imagine when they go, okay, we're clear for commercial. They're like, hey, that was really funny. Good job. Mm-hmm. You know, right, blah, blah, blah. Right. The jokes that they do when they're in the show are so cheesy that they're hilarious. His whole monologue is Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's all Monica Lewinsky. And Monica Lewinsky, I believe it, I don't know if that's at the height of it or if that is at the end of it, but.
He went through two interns, so it's at the end of it.
Okay. So he's still doing Monica Lewinsky jokes.
Everybody was.
And it's just, and they're so, and also the about him having sex, you know, he's like, me, any of the show is a lot like me in bed. There's laughing for an hour and then somehow Hank shows up. I forget what it is. It's like, it's such a shitty joke, but I laughed out loud. I thought it was great. But that's, I guess what I'm saying is, like, there is, it's so brilliant when the fake cameras are up humor versus when the fake cameras are off humor,
dark,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Without the real cameras.
And that artificiality of it. And that's called out too. When Jim Carrey starts doing his, like, fuck you bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's a split second where Larry Sanders is like, wait, are you doing a bit right now? And he's like, no, this is serious. Fuck you.
And he said, the cameras are off.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing, that thing of, like, you know, what happens in front of the camera versus behind the camera. And, you know, I mean, I think obviously, like, Hollywood is a dark place, but it's a really weird thing where everyone is fighting for a limited number of jobs. Right. And I think we all had that on a much lesser scale. But, like, you know, I had that thought, you know, when I was doing stuff at UCB, where, like, we're all friends here. Like we're, you know, we're all friends, but I know that most of these people would stab me in the kidneys to get that next commercial job. I mean, just because like we're all friends, but we're also all competing at the same time. And so when he was like, what are you going to do? Movies? I'll crush you. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's like, you never like, you know, and then even Todd Petty and Clint Black being like, I want to be the Bette Midler.
Yeah.
It's such a funny bit. Cause it's like, it's every, you know, everyone's always competing all the time. Yet at the same time, we're all supposed to be best friends.
Right.
You know, in this weird industry.
I laugh so hard when they're like, hey, Greg Kinnear's an Emmy Award winning guy. Yeah, and Tom Petty goes, what, for Talk Soup?
Academy Award.
They actually go like to do fisticuffs. And then like a minute later, Tom Petty and Clint Black start doing fisticuffs. It's so funny.
I forget. I think Tom Petty calls him like Roy Rogers or something.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
so funny.
Oh, so good.
And even that
pettiness is amazing.
So great. But even that is the artificiality of like, of course the fucking country singer has to have a cowboy hat on.
Yeah.
Like all of that
is just
right. But I'm saying, but all that too is like the fake signifiers, like it's all fake all the way down. Like
and,
everything
and he
is
played his full song, which I was also like, huh. Like we watched the whole song.
Really?
But they did really nice cutaways. Like the two cutaways in there, one was funny. You know, she's like where Marilyn Rushgub is.
I love her so
much. She's great. She's like, I'm going to be the audience coordinator for Jeopardy.
Yeah. Jeopardy.
Like I have to pretend to give a shit about the Monroe Doctrine every day.
Yeah.
But then.
So great.
An amazing, amazing moment is also in a cutaway where Artie's watching the song. And Bruno Kirby comes up and he's like, I'm being bumped.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, well, we'll have you on. And he does that thing where Rip Torn, man, so good. He looks at him with that smile that just is like, it felt like, you know, when like your dad is like, the world, this is just the world and we're all, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Because he just says, well, we'll have you on next time. And Bruno Kirby does a great thing too, where he's like pissed, but he's also like, oh, these guys are in their own thing. Like I'm the asshole now for wanting to interrupt their moment and their thing just for my own edification, but then ends it with like, God, a man saying no other man. That's weird.
Yeah. I have to say about Rip Torn, this is embarrassing, but I knew he was in Beastmaster, which is a movie from my childhood that I love.
Mark Singer.
I thought he was the Beastmaster, Rip Torn. I spent the whole episode going, he doesn't look at all like the Beastmaster.
Yeah, I have a really
he's clearly like a foot shorter than him.
Yeah.
I have a good Rip Torn thing that I'm going to make you listen to because I'm talking blah, blah, blah. So Rip Torn, I used to believe he made up his name to see if he could be famous. And I told that lie to everybody. Just realized, nope, it's really his name.
I mean, but it's like, it's part of like
his
a
name.
Longer.
Torn.
It's like William Rip Torn.
No, his last name is Torn.
Oh, okay. But it's like
his name is like, I mean, I have it in front of me, but I'm not going to tell you because I found a better story than my lie about Rip Torn, his name. He filed a defamation lawsuit against Dennis Hopper over a story Hopper told on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Hopper said that Tom pulled a knife on him during pre-production of the film Easy Rider. So that's just like a connection, within Rip Torn. The end.
Oh,
speaking
of lawsuits, and this is what's again so meta, whatever. So the woman who was in front of Piven, you know, when they had that revisiting thing, was an actress on the show who also lived with Gary Shandling in real life. And then when they broke up, she sued him for sexual harassment and something else. But then I remember. I don't know if this is on a DVD or a re-release or whatever, but like when they re-released the Larry Sanders Show a few years ago, Gary Shandling and her did an interview together and she talked about how he was awful to her and like, there is such a weird, like he blurs the line between reality and fiction in a way that like Andy Kaufman never could. And like, you know, in a way that is just holy shit.
Just to clarify, they did a joint interview that he was sitting there as she was saying these things.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was his defense of himself?
God, I don't remember. I think it was like, I'm sorry. I was in a bad place, or I don't know. I don't remember.
I swear, I don't think I'd ever seen an interview where like the actual accused is with the person. That's astounding.
It wasn't like on the stand. It was just okay, let's talk about like what Oprah. Happened.
Right.
Yeah. But
yeah, I guess whatever the legal thing is probably over.
Yeah.
Now. Right. I just imagine what a weird choice to be like Gary Shandling being like, yeah, okay, I'll talk to you about it.
Well, like Luke was saying, I mean, Gary Shandling, I think in reality, by his own admission, was kind of an asshole. And it was just amazing how he was like, that's what my comedy is about how I'm kind of an asshole. Unlike, say, an Ellen DeGeneres, like, wouldn't hide that fact.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was about.
Got
it.
And he also bases that. I mean, like, I interpreted his being an asshole as a character and as a person based on insecurity, based on being anxious and all that stuff. You know, and it might be me putting my own responses about my own insecurities and how I react to people on him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, seeing him interact with like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't know. Oh, hi. Oh, I hate that guy. Let's crush him.
Yeah.
Based, you know, and it becomes the basis of his humor, but it's also like, I remember, an episode where he goes to see his therapist, and the beginning of the episode, he shows his therapist an episode like the previous night's show, because he would always watch the show too, which was like, really, that was the thing too. It was uncomfortable. And the therapist like, yeah, in bed. And the therapist like, cool, very nice, and blah blah blah. What do you know? And he's like, well, I want feedback on the show. And he's like, well, I'm here to like be your therapist and talk about what's bothering you and blah blah blah.
He's like, bothers me that I didn't get this bit right.
Yeah. But then the end of the episode is the therapist says, hey, I wrote a script and I'd love you to take a look at it. And I interpret that as like the epitome of Gary Shandling in a way where it's like, I'm hurt. I need this help. But then the people that I turn to for help also need
just
me.
Just want a part of
yeah.
Are, you know, exploit me. And, you know, he also has been involved with some litigation with like, I believe Brad Gray or Bernie Brillstein, who are like major players, because they want to take some points.
Louise Dreyfus's husband,
Brad Hall.
That's Brad Oops. Hall.
There's a lot of Brads.
rumor
started here. Yeah, Kasky.
He Rip Torn is she's married to him. Anyway, I'm rambling. All this is to say is like he is a very complicated guy, and he blends all of this together very well.
So, not knowing really much about all of this background that you're giving, would you say in today's world he'd fall into a Me Too type of like he needs to be like pulled away category? It sounds like things were different.
Probably would. I mean, you know, like.
Stern definitely, if Stern's show from whatever year before now had been made, like he would have been canceled in Me Too. But he did a flip, which it sounds like Gary did as well, of like either, you know, Stern has cleaned up his act or he's just pretending so that SiriusXM will pay him $50 million. I don't know. But he's gotten a publicist that's made him quote unquote okay and not canceled. But I think Gary actually did the work as opposed I don't know Howard Stern. I can't speak to that. But Howard Stern should have been canceled. But because he opened up and he became a better person and a little more feely and it pissed off his listeners to a certain extent. Not that they're still paying for their subscriptions, but I think there's a really fun, a very good parallel between Gary Shandling and Stern.
Yeah.
But I think Gary actually had heart, because the amount of people who came, when he died, of course he died, but before he died, said what he did for their career.
Yeah.
I think there was a part of him that was just ultimately a good person who was very complicated.
Yeah. I think that he, I don't
just like in the soup with this shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I don't, no, I don't think that he, yeah, I don't know that he, I could see him, especially with a loved one, being abusive, maybe not physically, maybe physically, I don't know, but definitely verbally, and upset. I mean, like, look at the relationship with him and Hank, with Larry Sanders and Hank. I mean, that's an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that he did something to the extreme of like a Harvey Weinstein or even a Louis C.K. I mean, Louis, you know, where he forced women to, like, I don't know that Gary Shandling ever raped anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
My suspicion is that would have come out by now if anybody was going to speak to it.
Right.
That's just a suspicion. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but my guess is somebody would have spoken, especially even after he died. He does come off as like the tortured genius, and like,
yeah.
There's not a great track record of them being great supporting relationship partners.
No. I mean, he died alone. He was married when he died.
Right.
And he literally, you know, died. It's in the documentary that Judd Apatow did, but like, he had a growth or a tumor or something, I think, at the base of his brain or somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds
right. And when it was finally discovered, the doctor was like, have you been in a lot of pain? Because this will cause a lot of physical pain. And the assumption was just that he kind of assumed that was
life.
Just life.
Yeah.
Like this physical pain. And so he never did anything about it. Didn't seem foreign to him to deal with it. And I don't know, man. Torture genius.
Yeah.
This is a tangent, but you know,
we've been on the straight and narrow. So
yeah. I don't mean to deviate from our straight line, but the one episode that probably maybe the single greatest scene of Freaks and Geeks to me is when I forgot who the tall, gawky. It's Martin Starr, but I can't remember his character's name.
Bill
comes home and like he's a latchkey kid and he makes his own lunch, and like watching Gary Shandling is like the best thing in the world. Like that's his happy place. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but like how hard he's laughing and like how much you can see Bill is like, that's like me. That's me. I'm like you. Yeah. You know, like that was just wonderful.
I mean, I'm sort of you know, this goes back to what I was saying before. I've been sitting here racking my brain trying to think if there is a Gary Shandling equivalent today. In that, I wonder, when you're talking about like, would he be canceled? Like, I wonder, because again, so he was like openly like, I'm an asshole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the Howard Stern thing too, of like, would he even be cancelable? Because he kind of already told you everything that happened. I do want to say that I looked it up. That lawsuit, I think, was more about her being fired from the show than about anything. Like, basically, like, they were sleeping together, they broke up, he fired her.
Yeah.
And so it was like, well, you can't do that. That's sexual harassment if you fire me because we
got it.
Up. I don't think it was like, you know, sexual, like, whatever. Yeah. I don't think it was anything like that. But that's still an asshole thing to do. So, I mean, but again,
I lost my boyfriend and my job.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, but I don't know, you know, again, I mean, I think someone like an Ellen DeGeneres gets it worse when it's like, oh, you've been lying to us this whole time. It almost feels like a betrayal. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just, because she was on this episode, I keep bringing her up, but that thing of like, and I think even like if Louis C.K. had a bit in his stand up about how he liked to masturbate in front of random women, I wonder if it would have been as big of a deal as it was, because I'm just saying, because for me, it was like, oh fuck, I trusted you.
Yeah.
And you're doing this thing that's horrible. Like that makes me feel like an idiot forever trusting you.
Right.
So I just kind of wonder, there just really isn't an equivalent of Gary Shandling.
This probably isn't a good parallel, but Cosby did joke about giving women
that is true,
and I don't think anybody believed it. Like I think that they were like, oh, yeah,
Cosby.
Well, that's exactly why, because the rest of his persona didn't reflect any of that.
Yeah. Well, and he also too, he had a good 15-minute set on beating his children,
right?
And we were all like, he is a good parent, you know. It was it was there. The person I think that may be equivalent, and this is. I haven't done the work, but the style of humor. I've done the work on that. I haven't really listened to and done all this, but like Bo Burnham does a lot of mixing and blending the fourth wall reality, fiction, nonfiction sort of thing. I'd be curious to see where he goes in a few years, and especially with like, I haven't watched it yet because I hear it's really hard and dark, but also
and
funny,
COVID-y.
But his mm-hmm. Netflix special is supposed mm-hmm. to be really great.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who else actually, not in terms of talent, that's a personal opinion from me and necessarily subject matter, but maybe like a Pete Davidson too, who like a lot of his comedy is about how messed up he is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, he made a career on his father's death of 9/11 in a weird way. And
well, it's a way to get remembered because no one will forget.
Yeah.
He'll never forget.
Nice.
But also, honestly, I sort of feel like he's the first person to be like, yeah, I don't know why I'm so famous. Like, like
but
he has
love
he,
me.
He seems like he is just struggling to survive day to day and like could just like, yeah, I got lucky. This is great. I don't know why.
Yeah. But, and if you've got cocaine, I will snort it. Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly, allegedly, allegedly. All right. I mean, anything else on this episode?
I will just say, in terms of series finales, it probably one of the best I've ever seen. It does. Luke, you said, you know, about how you got choked up in parts. I had almost, I don't want to say the opposite effect, but I certainly wasn't nearly as invested. I was surprised that they didn't go for it at all. Like they're to me, like I liked that last conversation in the theater, but I didn't feel like they were trying to get me to feel like, which kind of goes in the opposite because I like to feel, but I also don't like it to be forced upon me.
Right.
And I don't feel like they did that at all. I felt like for a finale, it was a great one in that they were true to who they always were.
Right. Yeah. But there was also when he looks at the set at the last shot is him looking at the set before they go out to help Hank, who's crashed his car into a dumpster.
Yeah.
It is just, I really felt that moment where there was a guy who just, especially after saying like, oh, I should have done this 6 months later. I can't get off the stool. I can't do this. What am I doing? Just a closure there that was just really amazing.
It's to me, it's similar to the last shot in Cheers when the bar is like finally shut.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sam's like, the guy, I think somebody says, are you open? And he's like, no, we're closed. And like, that's the end of it.
Yeah. And in some ways, like, I mean, it's such a, it was such a great thing where it was sentimental and they would undercut that. But it also had that feeling of like, you know, that's life. Like it's nice in a story when things end, but that's not how life is. Like one chapter ends and then you have to wake up the next day and like keep living your life.
Am I wrong? Or weren't they making plans? Not for a new show or anything, but they're going to see each other again. They don't do a like, well, it's been great. Goodbye. I think that they were still like, well, we'll get together and do this or that.
Right.
Oh, he's an executive producer. He's not his agent. His agent is played by, who is that guy? Just smarmy and wonderful. I'm blanking. Anyway.
Was it David Paymer?
That's a name. I say yes.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
It's David Palmer.
Okay.
Paymer.
All right. I vote Fizbo.
Okay. You son of a bitch.
I think we know where this one's headed since
I want to put out there, like, yes, we're almost we're halfway through, more than halfway through this 25 episodes. If I could do the math, I would, but I'm not going to.
I don't think we're halfway through.
So our first thing that I want to do is The Office versus The Office, right?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I also really want to do this series. So
yeah, yeah. I definitely want to do watch as much as I can about this one. I when I ended, I turned to Michelle and said, we have to watch the show now.
Yeah.
This is, we have to do this.
You know, I mean, this is a positive thing. Going back and watching these shows, because I didn't see every episode of the show, but I probably have seen most of it. And then I did see this last episode, although I barely remembered it watching it. But so it's a good thing to go back. I love going back and watching these sort of random episodes and like remembering things or seeing things I'd never seen before and remembering things I liked. But like, I was just like, oh damn it. Cause I was going to watch all Flight of the Conchords. Like,
right.
Right.
Like, and how am I going to watch all this? Like, there's well, just like
Conchords is only two seasons.
I know, but there's this sort of this crushing feeling of like, there's just too much good TV. When could I possibly watch all of this?
Ted Lasso season two is out. I mean, what are we supposed to do?
I know. It's too much.
Dune is so good.
But anyway, all right, cool. So, all right. So does this beat Flight of the Conchords?
Yes.
Yeah.
Theirs is on top.
Jim Carrey pushed it over the edge for me. Like, that was so good.
God, what did he do? The like, he was like one, two, three, and then the bing, bang, boom, and it ended with him giving the middle finger.
So,
and he blows it away. I was like, that is such a funny like thing to do. Yeah. Oh man, it's great. It was great.
Not to get COVID-y about it, but when he went into the audience, my first thought went, oh, they don't have masks on. Like, that's how much it's ingrained in my head.
Yeah. I know. All that's so weird now.
Yeah.
To see.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just the like little things of, not to go back because we're done with the episode, but just like when, just like Bob Odenkirk just doing coke. Like,
kind of like, close the door.
It's not mentioned. Like, it's not brought up. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's an agent. He's just doing coke. Like, whatever. It's so funny. That's great. Yeah, so, all right. So,
yeah, I'm trying to find what is our next episode after this.
Well, that would be, I mean, I think we're up to South Park.
Oh, wow.
Which one?
Number 13. It's called Scott Terriman Must Die.
Is that the?
Yes. I think this is a famously brutal episode.
Oh, man. I can't wait. I can't wait.
We'll talk about it.
This is a good one.
Yeah. So, so it's South Park, Scott Tenorman Must Die from 2001. So, and I believe if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I believe the way to watch it is go to southpark.com and all the episodes are available.
Oh, good to know.
I believe that is how you watch that.
Okay. So, I thought it was on HBO for some reason.
Maybe it's also on HBO, but
that'd be more convenient for me, Dan.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. However you out there watch, I know there, but I believe there was some, when they like redid their contract with Comedy Central, there was some provision where they like had to be able to stream their own episodes.
Good for them.
Good. Good on you.
The man. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about those two guys.
Yeah.
Both good and bad.
Yeah.
When we get there. So, but okay, Michelle, take us home.
Thank you so much for listening to another FN podcast about sitcoms. This is episode, I think, like 44 or something crazy. We're almost 50 episodes in, you guys.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Look at us go.
So thank you so much for continuing. I know you're listening right now, so thank you for that.
Yeah. Yep.
And then thank you for listening next week and for last week. But I'm saying goodbye to you now. Bye. I'm Michelle Lykowski.
I'm Stan saying goodbye.
I'm Luke Ward saying goodbye.
I'm Dan, the producer, saying bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another effing podcast about sitcoms. The music for our theme song is by Ryan Satoy, and the lyrics and vocals are by our own Michelle Lykowski. Our logo was created by Luke Ward. Follow us on Instagram, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, well, we'd certainly appreciate it. Another effing podcast about sitcoms will return in this time slot next week.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.